Welcome back to Podcast from the Edge with me, Peter Bruce. As we introduced the final episode in our trilogy, we started a few weeks ago on the post office, the demise of the post office, talking to former CEO Mark Barnes. Mark, thank you for all of your time. So it's end of July, last days of July 2019. More than 40 months now you've had at the post office as CEO. 3.5 years is a big chunk of time. You'd warned the government that if they separated the post bank out of the post office, you would resign. They politely said that's not possible because cabinet has already decided, and what cabinet decides is apparently the word of God. So they went away and you had to go too. How difficult was that?
It's still difficult. You know, it's still. We were building something that was could have been a case study for so many rejuvenations and so many attitude changes in government service, and so many people. I invite you to go. Let's find the nearest post office here and let's go to it, and you'll see. And the people still there will go, Mark Barnes, because, not because of me, but because of, we made us. We were us. You know.
And was your picture up in the post office?
No, I don't think so. But the pictures of the ministers and the president are here. Yeah. No, I didn't need to have my picture up there. But, you know, not long afterwards, about a year after that, I wrote another letter here, which starts off. It went to the DG and it went to the minister, and it says, "I have been following with a mixture of despair, anger, and sadness the apparent unfolding demise of SAPA in the media." Okay. And I then went on to say a few things, and that letter was followed shortly by an offer, a proposal. It wasn't an offer because it wasn't yet finally funded. A proposal to buy the post office at the net asset value where I left it, which was this $5.2 billion, which was the last net asset value. And I said, what we'd like to do is put a consortium together. And I was beginning discussions with Alibaba as my partner to replicate the model that Amazon...
This is the Chinese Amazon, right?
And so with Jack Ma. Not that I spoke to him, I spoke to the ambassador here locally. And I said, here's what I'd like to do. I'll pay you the NAV that I left, okay, which was substantially diluted anyway. And we'll buy with a consortium, a logistics, international logistics partner, we will buy the post office. And I will give 10% of the shares to the employees of the post office. And there will be a 40, and so we'll have 51% as this consortium. And I'll have none myself. And there will be and the government will have 40%, retain 40% in the upside with no further funding required whatsoever.
Yeah. So the government 40%, the staff 10%,
and the partners in the operational shareholder mix would have control. Yeah. But the 40% shareholder by government would have certain golden entrenched rights and certain rights of veto. Given that it was an organ of state,
What? What would it be?
Like
able to
veto? They could enforce the need for us to deliver, even if it wasn't profitable. Like they could enforce the payment of social grants terms, or so there would be.
And they could stop a takeover.
And all those sort of things. They had reserved rights, so that we could ride this two-lane. Story of a state enterprise run by private enterprise principals, but subject to the social.
And you were happy to do that without the post bank?
No, I wasn't happy to do that.
So the post bank was part of
the post bank hadn't been taken out yet. It was only physically removed. And I still don't know where. It's somewhere in the desert at the moment, the post bank, all on its little own. So I don't think it's legally entitled to take deposits anymore. We can get to that in a minute. Okay. Yeah. And so I sent that in. The minister at the time was Minister Nchavini, who's the current minister in the presidency. I didn't even get a response from that. Not even.
She didn't respond.
Nothing. And eventually I published the offer in the newspaper.
I remember that.
So that everyone, because you've still got no answer. So they ghost you. In fact, I've heard it said that she came to the head office at post office and tell them that they'll never do a deal with Mark Barnes. And I've had that on very good authority. And so you go like, okay, well, why not, man? You know. And so imagine if they had done the deal. I would have bought the thing for 5.2 million billion. Since then, they've had to write off like 8 billion of loans.
Yeah.
How did the hell did those loans arise? Because there weren't any there when I left.
But sorry, these are loans made by the post office.
No, the post office hasn't made any loans. No. These are indebtedness that was incurred by the post office. So I suspect, and I don't know, and I want the Auditor General or Scope or someone to find out what happened to the depositors' money that they took out.
Yeah.
Because how come Post Bank needed money?
Yeah.
Post Bank was a balanced. So maybe they lent that to the post office and they lost it or something. I don't know what happened.
We don't know.
We don't know. Okay. And we need to know because it's not explained. And the extent and the... I want to see the debits and credits. Okay. So, but that's a separate exercise. So this now takes place and I offer... And everyone was, arrogant, this and you know, and you're trying to steal the post office. And I said, I've got no economic interest in this thing whatsoever, you know, at all. And I won't have, ever, okay. But still, you know, and there's still a sense in South Africa that private sector want to steal assets.
Yeah.
Why is there no possible intersection of goodwill between people who can run businesses and people who need a business to run in order to create a functional ecosystem for the country at large? Why can we not trust each other just that much?
Okay. Well, it might just be, and I don't, you know, I know this is, sounds a bit trite, but I mean, it might be a measure of the damage done by apartheid and all the years preceding all of this.
Yeah.
Damage, real damage to the way people think and the relationship between white and black is one thing, private sector and state sector, it's damaged.
It is damaged. But here's the thing. And I agree with you, it is damaged.
Yeah.
Okay. But I wouldn't like to say it's irreparably damaged.
Yeah.
You know, we did create a thing called the Rainbow Nation, okay, where we all queued. Okay. Now, whether, you know, those have remedied things, the answer is we haven't remedied.
No.
We haven't cured.
No.
And I quote, I won't start quoting other people, but until... I'll use their words, until we have more faith in our future than we have hate for our past, we're never going to get there, okay? Mm-hmm. And so the post office had this incredible commercial social straddle that it could uniquely pursue as a case study, as a cookie cutter case study for how government and private sector could build something with a dual mandate.
Yeah.
That was what I wanted,
yeah.
Okay? And if you look at the one thing the Rainbow Nation has succeeded at, it's rugby.
Mm.
Okay. And why? Well, you know, I'm drawn into the words of, or the title of the book about Lincoln. The title of the book is A Team of Rivals, which is such a lovely phrase, you know, because the Springboks are a team of rivals, both in between one another for position, and they play for opposing teams the very next week and so on, and so, but they come together with common purpose.
Yeah.
Okay. And the big fat prop oak, okay, knows that unless he passes the ball to the skinny little fast running wing, they're not going to score a try.
Mm.
So they look for the ball and they pass it to the right person. That's what we needed to do. And for that, we require extraordinary leadership. And this constant mistrust that we have of one another is just in the absence of good leadership and in the absence of common purpose. And this, I saw this as a catalyst for demonstrating how it could work. And that was taken away from us at the post office. And I borderline weep about the fucking thing every time I think about it.
But the interesting thing about it all is that it wasn't Jacob Zuma who did it,
mm-mm,
or Kgalema Motlanthe or Thabo Mbeki. It was Cyril Ramaphosa. He did this. He allowed it to happen. And Minister Ntshavheni, who said to you, we will never do a deal with Mark Barnes, now works in his office. She's his cabinet spokesman. She's his intelligence minister. Probably the closest minister to the president, right? Did he ever contact, have you seen him again? Have you ever had an opportunity to talk to him about what he did?
Before her, there was Stella Ndabeni Abrams.
She would have been very destructive.
And, well, she, I think she drove the extraction of the post bank. I think it was under her. I mean, Ntshavheni was really temporarily the minister.
Yeah.
And so she was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, maybe. But she did ignore everything. But I think Minister Ntshavheni Abrahams drove this thing and promoted it as best I know. I wasn't privy to any of those any of those discussions. So
she's been in a number of positions at which she's done absolutely nothing. Yeah, small business,
small business. At least she gets to go to Davos.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm not really interested in the personalization of this kind of thing. I'm interested in whether we can learn some lessons, or whether we can all sit on the one side of the table and go, well, let's try again. Let's try something else. You know, whether it's Eskom, whether it's Transnet, whether it's national health, whether it's basic education, we are divided across too many metrics. Okay, and even the measurements of success and failure are ill-based. Okay, and there's still huge racial divides, and there's still massive inequality. Just the participants on those two polarized places have changed. That's all.
Yeah.
So we've achieved little.
What has happened to the bank now and the post office? Where are they? What's their position?
If the BRPs are to be believed,
BRP being business rescue
practitioners,
this is a business rescue. This for people abroad who listen to this podcast, all three of them, is a form of Chapter 11 in the US. It's a bankruptcy proceedings, right? And you try and get out of bankruptcy.
It's a last attempt.
Your creditors take a haircut. And.
It's the last attempt to avoid bankruptcy if you possibly can. If they're to be believed, they got a further introduction of about $2.5 billion, and then looking for another $3.8 billion. Bear in mind, this is a post office that didn't need money 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, and the post bank is looking for $3 billion to build systems and do whatever to pursue.
So it's still not the state bank they wanted it to.
It's not a state. It hasn't got a license. Okay, so I don't understand how it can operate legally without a Reserve Bank license and without a Treasury guarantee. So it must still have a Treasury guarantee, or it's operating illegally. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, and I won't get an answer from anyone. And the post office is manifestly on its last legs. In fact, it's insolvent because, I mean, it's now being thrown odd bits and pieces of $380 million here and there to pay salaries and things of this nature. Having written off something in excess of $7 billion of debts. Now, for those who don't know, a scheme of arrangement with your creditors is when you say to them, listen, I want you to take 10 cents in the rand or whatever, because otherwise you get nothing. Okay, and so you do a compromise with creditors, and I think the compromise that was done with the creditors of the SAPO group was they got 12 cents in the rand. Okay, so 88 cents of their money they wrote off. Now, these creditors include SARS, for example. I'd love to go to SARS and say, you know, like, I'm having hard times, eh? Can we write off my debt to you? Okay. The state went to the SARS and said, can you write off our debt? It's beyond my acceptable comprehension to think the South African government can enter into a compromise of creditors.
At one stage, and it might still be the case, SAPO, the post office, had stopped paying or paying tax for medical aid contributions,
and pension fund contributions, and whatever else.
Right. So those people are truly stuffed.
And the workers are the people that are.
It's amazing. So I live near Hermanus in the Cape, and every now and again, I go into the. I've been in twice. I get a note months after the parcel has arrived.
Mm.
Oh, there's a parcel for you, and you go in there, and it's dark because the lights aren't on. But there are two people behind, and they could not be more kind and helpful and sweet and funny and good-humored when you go in there. And it's empty, by the way. There's no queue anymore in the post office in Hermanus. You go in there, you're the only one there. Maybe it's two other people. And it's always quite pleasant. We have a little joke, and I get my parcel, and it takes quite a long time to find it.
Yeah.
and then you that's the only contact I have. And I remember also going to, you remember the post office center in Johannesburg?
Yes.
In Illovo. There was a post office there, right? Yeah. And I clearly remember going in one day because there was a hairdresser nearby, and that's where I used to have my haircut. And I promise you, my memory of it is that I went in to have a haircut, and the post office was open. When I came out, it was closed, and I don't think it's ever opened again. There were little notices stuck on the door with sticky tape saying, this post office is closed, use Greenside or Parkview or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And that was it.
I think they've closed a substantial number of the branches. I was corrected when I thought they'd sold them, but they hadn't, it seems to me, sold them yet. So Peter, you know, we were completely at odds, and you know, I've got reams of evidence that we presented our cases and so on, and one day maybe there'll be a commission and we'll find the truth. But I'm interested in discovering the truth, and then I'm more interested in saying, well, what next? What could we do anything still? If the post office is allowed to go bankrupt, it'll be only this second post office ever in the history of the world that's been allowed to happen. The other one was on a little island somewhere. Okay.
Yeah.
So it would be that much of a precedent. What could you do? And a lot of people ask me whether I'd be interested. It's not about me. But what could you do? Imagine a world. And so I have perforce been into the substitutes for post offices to get things done.
Yeah.
Go to Jetline to get something printed, go to a courier to get something Post-net delivered, whatever, go to this to pay salary. Yeah. Other people are paying social grants. Yeah. All the things that the post office has done have been substituted by competent private sector players. Okay.
So you can now get your grant from Checkers, right?
You don't
have to go to the post office.
Yeah, and so they've stolen our lunch, but we could get it back. Okay. Because we could do it at a different price, and we could offer different services, all this. So there is a world in my wildest imagination which says, okay, suddenly you gave somebody, let's take me out of this, the post office that was there in 2019 when I left, within $5.2 billion NAV, no liability. So you could create that with the stroke of a pen, in the same way that you created the write-off of debtors, of creditors with the stroke of a pen. And what did you do? Well, if it was me, I'd go, let's go buy a courier company and give it this extraordinary advantage of our embedded infrastructure. Let's go and buy a printing company like, you know, Jetline for someone like that. Let's go and do a deal with all of the drug and hospital distributors of medicine as the government. Okay, and let's go, we will distribute your medicine, antiretroviral, whatever, your chronic medicine for free. Let's go and get a Wi-Fi license which enables us to have free Wi-Fi access at every post office. Yeah. So if you're wandering past on your day, you can go and sit in the post office and have, let's download free education. Let's write exams in post offices. Let's, you know, let's whatever, okay? And let's do that at a tiny little cost, and even maybe a subsidized cost from the from government, until we create an ecosystem which is not just a place of refuge, but it's a place where you go to step up, even if it is to get an SMME loan, if you like, or whatever it is, not from the post bank, but to do the administration and the paperwork, to get the licenses, to get all of those things done.
Yeah.
We have this vast arms around our people infrastructure whose mindset is to build things.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I remember the Financial Mail cover 2007 or so, Carol Payton wrote it, interviewing a senior politician, senior member of the ANC, and he famously said to her, and the quote keeps coming back, that nothing the ANC ever does doesn't involve a plan for somebody in the ANC to make money. And that still applies today, and it's just a fact of life, you know. If there's nothing in it for anybody in government who's got to put their hand up and say, okay, well, we agree with that, it's not ever going to happen. And so whatever the fantasy is, whatever the ambition is, as you're talking about now, this fantastic, beautiful thing in the middle of our society, is not going to happen unless it makes the politician rich. Simple as that.
Or unless you get rid of those mindsets, which we have to do with our power to vote. I think that at some point, and we're close to that point, you have to recognize that you cannot harvest without planting. You have to recognize that we've got a diminishing, aging, leaving tax base. and you have and that the source of continuously funding where there's no revenue growth will not last forever. You have to realize that at 6 trillion rand, we cannot pay debt. We are a technically insolvent country. And this is the real end game, is that those same politicians that want to participate in that economics will no longer be in charge. At some point, if we go down this trajectory, we will be controlled by our creditors. The people who lend us money that we can't repay become our bosses. And whether they, whatever their agenda is, whether it's taking over Africa, whether it's exploitation of the resources of Africa, whether it's, whatever it might be, there's one way to own someone, and that is to lend them money they can't repay.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the route we're going down, because we are not creating net value, and we are incapable of raising foreign direct investment because of the very thing that you've just said. At some point, that stops working. And I think we're quite close to a universal recognition of that flaw. Whereas previously, ideology and loyalty and things of that nature outweighed those things. But at some point, you need to see a dentist. You can't become a dentist by the popular vote, okay? And at some point, you need manzi. You need water to come out of the tap. You can't drink a promise. And we're close to that. And our next challenge is whether we can move past coalitions, which are dysfunctional, to common purpose political power, which appoints professional execution capacity, so that we can get things done, so there's still something to fight about, because there's little left, and there's a deep, deep misunderstanding and ignorance of things, because the cost of capital to the unwisely enriched is zero, and so the value of capital tends to zero. Okay, ill-gotten gains don't cost; they just eventually cost. And so, until we understand this capital equation, and until we understand that earnings precede capital creation, and all of these kinds of things, we will become a lesser controlled body. We will have less to say about our own destiny until we owned. And yeah, that might be where it goes. I'm not going anywhere, ever.
No, me nor. But
that's just because I'm old.
Yes. So do you ever hear from your former colleagues?
Yeah.
And is it just we miss you, or good times back in the day?
I do. I hear quite a lot from the listeners, I suppose it's become. My common response is, let's not talk ill of the dead now. But I do, and I am prepared to say this. I reckon if we put together a new plan, and we walked into the head office in Pretoria with that plan, they'd be dancing in the corridors, man, because there are good people there. You know, let's not go into why, but there were so many places where it was an employment of last resort. The post office was one of them. The army was, there were lots of these state things that were a social bucket. The post office was one of those. Mm. Imagine if you took something whose primal purpose was to protect the weak and the disadvantaged, and turned it into aspirations rather than survival. You know, I don't want to get too political here, because I'm not standing for any job. But I think we're there, Peter. I think that in this country we are going to find ourselves holding hands, whether we like it or not, because we're going to have to survive together, and we'll destroy each other apart. And so I think we're close enough to go, okay, but let's stop this now. Okay, let's do this.
Interesting. I once heard Moletsi Mbeki, Thabo Mbeki's brother, say that the two groups of people in this country with the biggest interest in clean government was business and the poor.
Yeah.
And I think he was absolutely right. That stuck
with me. You can't eat what you don't produce eventually.
Yeah.
And, you can't improve education by lowering the pass mark.
Yeah.
Okay, you just can't.
Can we, to close, can we relate any of this to the shelf life or economic life of a tomato?
Yes, we can.
Which I spoke about in our first.
So I was introduced to that. So I put a proposal to Standard Merchant Bank's board to fund the purchase of a company called Freshmark, which was run by one Donny Kivit and Brian Kussel. And when I took this, the executive said to me, Mark, just let me understand this. This is a perishable product with a very limited shelf life that you actually have to pay money to get rid of after a while. And you want to put money into this thing, the bank to put money in. I said, yeah. There's only one reason, and that's because I found someone who understands the economic life cycle of a tomato. Okay. It was the first column I wrote for you. And the economic life cycle of a tomato works like this. It costs you money. When you plant it, it goes into the ground, it goes underground, and it grows, and it costs you money. You have to feed it, fertilize it, and water it. And then it comes out of the ground, and it starts turning into a tomato, and it creates value, and then it peaks. And there are only 4 days in the life cycle of tomato when it's at it, when it looks its best, tastes its best, and is its best. And on day five, it starts going rotten. And then the value curve goes all the way down until it goes to break even, and you have to pay money to get rid of it because it's waste. And I said, we're backing the guys whose tomatoes are only on the shelves for those 4 days. And they did the deal. And we sold Freshmark to Whitey Besson at ShopRite Checkers, and I believe that was the foundation of their fresh produce division. And so what's the message there? There are people in every field of business that I've come across that have a deep and natural understanding and talent for the world that they live in, and they have distilled the essence of the economic model that gives them an economic and commercial life, and sometimes that intersects with a social purpose. And when you find them, money is just a medium of exchange. Yeah. That's the rare part. And we've got them in buckets across all demographics and economic strata in South Africa, from that little guy in Maitland who taught us lessons about supply and demand in the and unit costs of distribution in the post office, to the most high-powered executives in the country. We have in South Africa in droves talent and ambition and hunger and lust. And almost uniquely, I'll back a South African, the best South African, against the best anybody in the world in business or any other endeavor. And so imagine if we started celebrating instead of decrying the differences between us, and we invited this mixed team into a common purpose. The capital will pour into this country. We won't be able to control it.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to one of the smartest financial or just general brains in South Africa. And Mark, thank you very much for all your time over the past couple of weeks. It's been a serious education. And there's probably a book in it for you. But really, thank you so much. I've really, really appreciated it. And thank you all for listening. If you've missed an episode, they are all available on the Business Day website or on the Apple or Spotify podcast platforms. Take good care. I'll be back with more podcasts from the Edge soon. So bye-bye. Thank you.
Thanks so much for the opportunity to express some of these things.